Thank you, Kat. Marvellous. Okay, let us motor on without any pause whatsoever to give the world the thing that they've been waiting for, Gabriella, which, of course, is the weather forecast for Lincoln, England, from Gibraltar, Europe.
Okay, so the weather for Lincoln today is highs of 6 degrees centigrade, lows of 4 degrees centigrade, and it's a day of heavy rain and moderate breezes.
And because last Friday I was doing a location report with Richard Fitzwilliams and with Zoe Jameson, and Ben Lewis actually joined us, and Ben said, I listened to the morning show and I'd like you to do the weather for London as well. I will actually add to that the situation in London, Ben, and anybody else who happens to live there, I don't know why you would, but anyway, is a day of heavy rain and moderate breezes, but in London, highs of 10 degrees centigrade, lows of 6 degrees centigrade.
Sounds pretty awful, the weather.
Yeah, it's highs of 6 over here.
Yeah.
It's freezing.
Yeah, you see, 4 degrees, 4 degrees lower than the capital at present of Great Britain. Britain, indeed. Sorry, having difficulty actually getting the words out there. Who knows? Weather okay in Gibraltar?
Yeah, a bit better. We've got sun and highs of 16 degrees with lows of 14.
There we are. In a Main Street antique shop, a charcoal portrait by Gustavo Bacarissas is up for sale. You've gone very heavily on the art scenario with the Gibraltar Chronicle, because earlier in the feed I noticed that you've got an opportunity to buy affordable art as well.
Yeah. Affordable art is, we've got every year, it's an annual exhibition, and it's just an opportunity for people and for artists as well to, you know, maybe put things a bit more simple, a bit cheaper, and get that art sold for Christmas. It's a good idea for people as well who can't usually afford really expensive pieces.
We're more than happy to endorse the work of great artists, but I'm looking at the image of the young lady who's obviously hanging something on her wall, which actually looks as though somebody's just basically sort of splattered paint all over it, a bit like Jackson Pollock used to do. I don't know. I mean, what do you think, Rory? Would you have that on your wall for, I don't know, a reasonable price?
I mean, I don't know what a reasonable price is for a whole bunch of paint splattered on a canvas.
Yeah.
Affordable art is something that I think I'd be interested in.
Yeah. I mean, how affordable is affordable, Gabriella? I mean, are we talking six figures here? Are we talking eight figures? Because, you know, clearly people have different sort of...
No, we're talking like, I think it goes from about 100 and something pounds to like, I can't remember how much it was, to about 300-ish.
It's not extortionate. Although, having said that, you know, if you're homeless and basically sort of people could turn around and say, look, I've got this £300, I can give it to you to have a hotel room for a few nights, or I can actually go and get a piece of affordable art. It's all relative, isn't it?
If you're homeless, you probably wouldn't want to get a piece of art, because where would you hang it?
You see, and that clearly is one of the reasons that many of the homeless charities haven't thought about this Christmas. It's all very well talking about, but what about, you know, giving people places to hang their affordable art? Honestly, just call me Scrooge. Moving on, Gabriella, this is the penultimate Midweek Drive Morning Edition, because obviously we have the final one of the 2019 season coming up next week. Have your festive preparations gone into full force? Are they all working splendidly?
Yeah, I've had my tree up now for a few weeks.
Wow.
I put it up in about mid-November.
Mid-November?
Yeah.
Wow.
Astounding. So, this nonsense about Advent and beginning to build from that point of view onwards. So, you know, once clearly we've had the joys of Halloween and Frodo's had his Halloween costume, it's right ready on. We're set for the next sort of stage, which brings us, of course, neatly to Frodo. We haven't spoken of him for many a time because obviously you no longer live together. Don't worry, it's not that kind of relationship. But is he going to be dressed up for the festive period? Have you decided on his outfit? Can you reveal effectively what he may or may not be strutting around the Rock of Gibraltar?
Frodo always wears his Santa outfit on the 24th. So, and I usually put on a reindeer jumper, so he's Santa and I'm the reindeer, because he's the boss. Let's face it.
Makes sense.
So, and yesterday he was wearing a bow tie because he had gone to his groomers and they had given him a nice bow tie to wear. So he left the groomers looking very smart in a bow tie.
this is a, I mean, this is a classic.
Living the life.
I think so. And yeah, if you wish to follow him on Instagram, of course, which presumably you do, Rory, Lord Frodo the Pug, I believe, is the way to
go. Yeah,
that's
right.
Fantastic handle.
I think so. I do think so, yeah. So, as we look at the sort of list of things that we, we're going to actually... We will be speaking about this, but Kira's book... Well, I didn't think she'd make it, actually. I felt that the last mince pie did for her, and Kira was obviously sort of channeling her inner Grinch. Ellie Sample, I don't know. The pun again. Ada, no sign. Emily, surprising Emily. I mean, she's heading home, but for Lass, who basically sort of was keen and sort of really keen as mustard to actually sort of represent Essex in the Lincolnshire area. Still, never mind, we can talk about that. Or not, as the case may be, because we've got to go to Richard Fitzwilliams in a few moments from now. We're also going to be listening to pet names and what the favourite names for pets happen to be, Gabriella. No spoilers, but you might like to check out the podcast, which also has a little bonus feature that we're doing with Rob Lee from Paddy Power about this thing that's been taking place today on whether or not, when he's on Sky later on, John Bercow will actually be wearing a tie of a single colour, or whether he would actually say the words, order, order, just for the fun of it. Okay? So there we are, sort of pushing the boundaries. Meanwhile, Rory, would you like to put those last two questions to Gabriella Peralta in Gibraltar?
I will, Alex. So, Gabriella, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I have, thank you.
And will you be coming back with the weather, hopefully better weather, next week?
Yeah, hopefully I will. Hopefully it's much
live
better.
From Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
You and a dog named Blue, how I love being a free man. thing, etc. At least a different poet. But it seems when it comes to our canine friends, equally there are lots of interesting challenges put forward. And as we look ahead to 2020, top five predicted dog naming trends include Goose and Maverick, obviously from the Top Gun sequel. Tokyo is coming in, Scooby-Doo, Mars, and even Gal and Wonder Woman. Well, the best person to actually talk about this with respect to, obviously, the influence that people, including politicians, actually have, possibly, in terms of naming our canine friends, is dog behaviourist expert for Rover. It's the awesomely talented Louise Glazebrook. How are you, Louise?
Good morning, I'm well.
Good. Now, in terms of this particular aspect, it's interesting, given, obviously, the election thing, we can't even mention who's actually in the lead, but let's hope we don't get too many people naming their canines after politicians, really.
That is true, that is true. We can't speak too much about that, but I agree.
No, exactly. But let's talk about those predicted naming trends, etc. I mean, you're a behaviourist expert. Mm. Do the dogs... I mean, obviously they respond to a certain extent, but is it something where you tend to think, I mean, they're really bothered about that? I mean, if you actually called them Alpha, Beta, Zeta 2, would they sort of still respond in the same way?
I mean, it's a good point. Dogs obviously don't really care what their name is. Mm. They will respond to what you teach them to respond to. However, I think the thing that's more significant is the way that as owners and as a general public, we then respond to the dog's name. So our perception of what that dog means.
And in terms of, say, the most interesting names, I've got to say, I thought that if you were going to name your pet Prosecco, Champagne or Gin... That could lead to all sorts of challenges, couldn't it, really?
Well, I mean, the research by Rover.com, it's surveyed over 2 million dogs. And obviously some of those names are on the rise. But what I would say is that those are obviously harder names to call out. So names like Prosecco are quite sweet and funny, but it's a harder name to be calling out in the park. But they are having a resurgence.
I mean, you're probably going to be shortening it to Pro or something even worse, really, on that basis, really, which I won't go into. But in terms of what Rover has also done, they've generated a dog name generator, I see.
Yeah, so people can go online and they can put in their dog's information and then they will be given ideas and inspiration to name their dog.
Now, obviously, I'm going to mention the darlingdogcompany.co.uk, in which I believe you say that your obsession with dogs began at 2 years of age.
That is right, yes.
Awesome. If you were to be sliced in half, don't do it, Louise. You'd still actually find that there'd be dogs running literally through
there
your
would.
Blood. So, I mean, clearly that connects. Do you have particular fonds for a particular breed, or is literally everything from a Chihuahua right the way through to a St. Bernard?
Oh, I mean, St. Bernard, you've hit the nail on the head there. I mean, I adore that breed. Obviously, I do have soft spots for certain breeds, but equally, what is amazing in this job is that you constantly meet dogs and breeds that maybe change your mind about perceptions. And that's what's amazing. But in terms of some of the breeds that I love, I mean, I love a poodle, I love a Hungarian Vizsla, a Great Dane, St. Bernard's, like you said. I mean, there's over 400 different breeds, so there's many to choose from.
See, I'm probably more of a sheepdog kind of person overall, really, in terms of...
like an old English.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you don't see many of them anymore.
No, exactly. There's a whole range of factors there. But popular culture and naming, etc., I see that not just Game of Thrones has actually given names Arya, Sansa, Ned, etc. Even Peaky Blinders has got in on the act, really.
Yeah, that's true. And even, you know, some of the other names are around things like Toy Story and Lion King, especially if people have got kids in the family, then those kind of things also have an effect. Because obviously, children like to have a role in naming that animal that's part of their gang.
And in at number three for the top five predicted dog naming trends, well, Scooby-Doo already is a dog, so maybe you should call your dog Shaggy, perhaps.
I mean, it would go well, because with a Y, it's kind of easy to shout across the park.
Yeah, precisely. Mars, I'm not so sure. I mean, Mars suggests a kind of Rottweiler to me, basically. It's like
Rex
or something.
Is that what it conjures up?
Yeah, well, it does, really. I mean, I know it's a Mars rover, which is fine from that point of view, but somehow it's like Mars, bringer of war, all sorts of other bits and pieces. I'm not sure at all about that. What's your own particular favourite name, Louise? I mean, in terms of canine friends, are you a pop culture soul? Are you a case of, no, I go for sporting icons, or you generate your own?
Do you know what? I actually was writing a list of some of the ones that I've had over the years of names that I love. And the ones that kind of stick out are Crumpet, Queenie, Salad, Welly, I love all those kind of ones.
Yeah, I had a Queenie back in the day, actually.
Did you?
Yeah,
what breed?
It was a mongrel. I'd probably say, yeah, some of those best. Golden retriever-esque sort of elements that were coming into them.
Oh, sweet. So, yeah, yes, I do love that name. Yeah.
Excellent. So where would you point people in the direction of finding out more details about this dog name generator, please?
Yeah, just pop onto rover.com and it will pop up and you can get your inspiration.
And I'd obviously mention once again the darlingdogcompany.co.uk because it's fantastic in all sorts
Thank
of ways.
You.
Louise, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with your good self, taking quite literally pause for thought. Sorry, I couldn't resist it. Will you be kind enough to return in 2020?
I will indeed.
I'm doing my Christmas dreaming a little early this year. No sign of snow around, and yet I go around hearing jingle bells ringing in my ear. Your promise must be the reason the happy season is here. So I'm doing my Christmas dreaming a little early this year. Be the reason the happy season is here. So I'm doing my Christmas dreaming.
Louise Sheehan, who actually sort of reminded us that it's actually Frank Sinatra's birthday today, or would have been born originally on the 12th of December, 1915. He would have been 104 years young had he been around. But he died in 1998, so he isn't. But Frank, if you're up there, that was for yourself. And of course, Eloise, who's a major fan of yours and actually visited, I think, the home where you were born in Hoboken, only to find it had been demolished. Or was it Los Angeles? I don't know. Just literally 3 or 4 months before she actually turned up, though, as well. Duh. Emma Street is here, and she's modelling a fantastic North American Space Administration T-shirt, which is wonderful. I actually have one myself, curiously enough. I thought for a moment you'd been raiding my wardrobe in a kind of, you know.
I would never.
Well, exactly. I thought, wow, this is interesting from that point of view, but still, what the heck. If you do come in, of course, in future episodes wearing a Star Trek gold a uniform short, or indeed a stingray one, I'll realise that clearly you have access and you've clearly been monitoring my shopping habits. Still, so it goes. Welcome back to the Midweek Drive, Emma.
Thank you.
The penultimate one for Midweek Drive Morning Edition listeners, but your final one of 2019, because you'll be working next week.
I am, yeah, working next week. So, yeah, this is my last one. Yeah.
Good news.
Rory can't make the Christmas show this evening, so there is a space available if you fancy coming along. But then again, you can't, because I think you're out of it. I don't know, whatever. I just thought I'd mention that. You know, it's all that. Sorry, Rory's obviously being very hangdog about the whole thing. He forgot completely. He thought it was next week, when of course he could have used the excuse, I'm not going to be on campus. It's okay. It's fine. Let's move on. Still to come, because Richard Fitzwilliams... Shall we reveal a trick? No, we'll hold the reason,
we'll
Richard.
Hold
yeah,
it.
we'll hold that reason momentarily until he actually joins us in the next hour. So we're changing a few things around. We will be listening in a few moments to some fascinating money saving tips from Andy Webb, who basically says we could save ourselves thousands through simply being aware of when our mobile phone contracts end. Thousands, I say. We'll find out about any money-saving expert, Andy Webb, and what he's got to say about that. Are you on a mobile phone contract, Emma?
Yes.
Are you, Rory?
I am.
Well, maybe you should listen to this next item. After Perry Como. PC? Well, of course it is. It's General Election Day. £700 million. I'll say it again, £700 million. That's the amount of money that British folk are unknowingly wasting on expired phone contracts, with new research revealing that we're wasting around about that £700 million figure simply by letting our mobile contract run on after the minimum term ends. Now, actually, to talk about this, who better than that awesomely talented money-saving expert extraordinaire, Andy Webb. How are you, Andy?
I'm very good, thank you.
Good. So this is a significant sum in terms of stuff where basically just inertia is allowing people to just say, oh, I can't be bothered to change my mobile phone contract, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's really scary, isn't it? It's one of the things that really kind of riles me a little bit as someone who's so passionate about getting people to save some money. And the reason this happens is because there's a lot of people who still get their mobile phone contracts as a bundle. And what it means is they are getting their handset alongside their minutes, their data and their texts, you know, generally as one price every single month. Now, there's actually a hidden premium in there anyway, which we can get onto in a bit. But the sense is that they're getting this over 24 months. So at the end of the 2 years, they've paid for their phone and more so. But then they don't necessarily contract, cancel it. And I think it's something like this research from Barclays Partner Finance has found that 4 in 10 Brits who have taken out these contracts are letting them roll over for an average of around 7 months. And they've worked out this is £121 per person who lets it roll over. And that's just because they've either forgotten or they can't be bothered. You know, other things have got in the way. They think, oh, I'll do it later. I'll do it another time. But it's £121. That's a lot of money that they could be using towards, I don't know, buying a new fancy handset or putting it elsewhere. It's a real shame that this is happening.
And it's clearly good news for the phone contractors because they would obviously hope to encourage their students or their customers to effectively maintain this inertia side of things, because it means they've got less work to do in terms of competition.
Yeah, absolutely, and sort of just taking in more and more money. I mean, it is going to get easier for consumers in the new year because Ofcom have released some new guidelines and some new rules. So networks are going to have to text you to let you know that your contract is expiring. So that does make it easier for some people who might not have diarised when their contract was finishing. At least they've got that reminder to actually maybe do something about it. And some mobile networks, not all of them, but some of them will be moving you to a different deal. So in theory, you shouldn't be paying for the handset as well as your minutes, your data and your texts when that contract expires. But it's not necessarily going to be the cheapest deal and the best deal. So the best way to get that is to shop around. And when you shop around, I would recommend not getting this bundled contract in the first place, because, as I mentioned, there is this kind of hidden premium. You don't realise it, but you know, if your that cost of that handset is not being split over 24 months evenly, it's a little bit is being added on top. The best thing you can do is to say split them out, get the handset on its own separately, and then get what's called a SIM-only deal. So you're only paying for your minutes, your data and your text, and that can be a lot cheaper on the monthly price.
I was also intrigued to find that 1 in 5 British folk prioritise the ability to get everything from one provider. Again, the kind of bundling that we've been talking about. And almost a third admitted to not shopping around to find the best deal. That's, again, it doesn't take too much to actually sort of do a little bit of shopping around. And, of course, the savings could be very worthwhile.
Yeah, okay, I understand sometimes people want to pay a little bit more for convenience, but do you want to pay £270 more for that convenience? Because that's what this research sort of found, that the difference in the cost of getting, say, an iPhone 11 in a bundled contract versus buying it separately and getting the minutes and data separately could be, you know, up to or around £270. I think that's too much to pay for convenience. Just spend a little bit of time, you know, just 10 minutes to research the different SIM deals and to research the different prices you can get the handsets. Like, I mean, I appreciate that some of these phones are very, very, very expensive. Like the new iPhone 11 Pro that came out a few months ago, that starts at £1,000, which is a lot of money. And most people haven't got that in their bank account ready just to spend. And that's another reason why people have liked the bundled contracts, because it does spread out the cost. But there are other ways you can spread that cost. So you could look at potentially a 0% purchase credit card. Or if you're particularly talking about Apple there, if you're after one of those, then they've got a deal with Barclays where you can get 0% finance over 24 months. So you aren't going to pay any extra like you would in a bundled contract, but you can, say, at least make it more affordable every single month. I should say that with any kind of credit borrowing, though, you need to make sure that you can afford this, and you make sure you understand that you have to pay back that payment every single month, because if you don't, you know, it can hit your credit file, you can hit with penalties, things like that. But if you want one of these pricey handsets, it's a really, really good way to spread that cost out.
Andy, we knew it was going to be sage advice. Where would you point people to go to online if they want to find out further information about what we've been chatting about today?
Yeah, so particularly if you're interested in getting that cheap Apple deal, do head to the Apple website and you'll be able to find the how-to deals on all those Apple phones. And if you want more information just about saving money on your mobile contracts, head over to becleverwithyourcash.com.
Andy Webb, money-saving expert extraordinaire. As we said, many thanks indeed and happy holidays, Andy.
You too.
Well said. So there we are, you see, Rory. It's how much you could actually save if you actually change your contracts and don't just let it hang on there, basically. Emma too, of course, well worth looking at from the point of view of just saving some extra pennies, and then the pounds will, of course, look after themselves. Last night we had the official song contest, and the winner, by a fair region in the end, was Stephanie McCourt. She was delighted when we informed her after the programme. This was her entry into the December 2019 Christmas song entry. It's her version of a classic. Take it away, Stephanie.
Chestnuts roasting on an open snipping at your nose. You'll die carols sung by a choir and folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe helps to make the season bright. Tiny tots with their eyes all aglow will find it hard to sleep tonight. They know that Santa's on his way. He's loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh. And every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly. And so I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas.
Despite the fact that politically we don't know where we're going, it would seem, and the whole range of other factors that are coming through, when it comes to small business, there is the indication that the confidence is coming back. Yes, UK small business confidence is rebounding, according to the latest SME health check in the third quarter of 2019. And to talk about this good news, we're delighted to welcome the Small and Medium Business Director at Virgin Money, the wonderful Sue Douthwaite. How are you, Sue?
Good morning, Alex. I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. So, Sue, finally a bit of good news at the end of the year, or is it just a case of, no, it's another false dawn, it'll all be back to tragedy and doom in 2020?
Well, I can't forecast the future, but what we can see is a small recovery in Q3 versus a pretty disappointing Q2 for the UK economy. So it reflects a pretty wide trend across the whole of the UK. The Q3 performance is up, but relatively muted in comparison to previous years.
And is it the B word that's impacting on this? Is it a case of the impact of the negotiation, the uncertainty and all the rest of the bits and pieces that kind of is pretty much at the heart of this continuing uncertainty?
Our SMEs, I think, really are looking to plan and invest, but because of the political uncertainty, which we all hope will be over later this week, and the economic impact that's bringing around international trade, so the cost of importing physical materials has increased. Exporting-wise, we're looking pretty positive, but we've got all sorts of issues around employment and bringing people in from the European Union, which we used to do. It's impacting the whole of the economy.
Now, certainly Yorkshire and the Humber and the West Midlands are seeing the biggest increases, but if you're in the Lincolnshire, Far Nottingham region, etc., the East Midlands, as well as Wales, of course, are the only regions to see a decrease in the index score from that point of view. Is that just a case of, well, we're not working hard enough, or is that a case of we don't have any motivation at all?
I would never say that SMEs have no motivation. They're the most resilient, passionate, optimistic people, the lifeblood of our economy. I do think the challenge is around employment. So you mentioned Wales, and we're seeing a fall in employment there. The East Midlands actually is a much more positive story. So the annual rate of employment growth actually accelerated to 3.4%. That region's now got the fastest rate of employment growth in the UK for two consecutive quarters. And that's partly manufacturing firms of the region, which were hit hard, are looking at their employability now and continuing to take on some new staff, which is a positive trend for us, I think.
Well, I'm pleased you said that, Sue, because it's always good from that perspective to actually sort of enthuse about good success stories. What advice would you actually give, though, to any small, medium business operatives who are listening to this, who might still have a little bit of fear about what's coming around the corner?
Our advice is to look after cash. So we've got a whole section in this report this quarter around Fair Pay, Fair Play, the FSB campaign, around improving payments. So we're saying to our customers, invoice better, be on top of your money, gather your cash in, and consider stringent payment terms. And at all times, if you've got any challenges for good reasons of growth or because you've got a late payment, then talk to your relationship manager because they will often give you good advice.
And in terms of where people can actually go to who might be listening to this conversation or have caught a bit of it and said, oh, this sounds fascinating, I want to find out more about what Sue is speaking about, where should they go?
Thanks, Alex. They should go to ybonline.co.uk.
Splendid. And as you're based in Huddersfield, straight talking Sue, obviously, from that point of view. Especially now you've got the Cowley brothers in charge of the side. Who knows, it might be all great from that point of view.
Well, let's hope so. We've had too many draws this season so far.
There we go. Sue Douthwaite, Small and Medium Business Director at Virgin Money. Many thanks indeed. And happy holidays, Sue. All the very best.
And to you. Thanks, Alex.
Of course, it's a pity that Ciara isn't here because Ciara would have actually vied with Ian Lennox in terms of who would have the most Grinch-like attitude to the festive times, basically.
Not a Grinch, really.
Yeah, I think so. I think you'll find, yeah.
Ciara?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, big
that
time.
Surprises me.
I know. There we are. Anyway, Ian, how are you this fine day after Pep Guardiola's boys have managed to actually turn around some sort of somewhat questionable results recently, but all's well with the world. Unlike, of course, Jose Mourinho, who's obviously testing people.
It's a good job not playing us every week, eh?
Yeah. Okay, moving on from that point of view, Emma is back with us now, and as you know, since last you spoke to Emma Street, no more Maurizio Pochettino, no more. Morris went, and Maureen took over. As in,
yes.
Moaning Maureen. Any thoughts on that, Ian, from your perspective on Tyneside? Because you haven't had a chance to really share any of that sort of joy with Emma because she's been doing other things.
We are talking about Tottenham Hotspur here, aren't we?
We are, yes.
Yes, well, if he's sacked a manager, from what his record, what he did for the club, and I just don't know how he keep your job anyway. So it's, the whole thing is just madness for me. I don't know enough about what went wrong at Tottenham, but no one seems to... In football nowadays, no one seems to accept that there should be anything but a steady incline towards success. If there's any blip, the manager gets the blame and he gets the bullet.
Yeah.
I mean, the man rescued Tottenham from years of bad buying, of bad management. And
let's face it, Tottenham were in so many ways, Ian, the Newcastle United.
He built the club
London.
Up and then he got them into the final of the European Champions League Cup. And the next day he gets the sack.
I'm as confused as you are, really, with it all.
But on the plus side, Emma, you're going to win something, OK? I mean, it's inevitable.
Well,
I mean,
yes, OK. If you get a sack for his record, who's left in the job?
Well, I thought, you know, kind of...
Certainly not any of the chairman or the owners of the clubs, because they're people who... They never get the sack, do they?
They don't. I do think
anyway,
it's higher
up
the Spurs.
It's just madness to me. It's just stupid.
Ian's obviously just very happy that he's got an owner as caring and wonderful as Mike Ashley, who's got that perspective on life. Guarantee that. Well, you know, you've got your Daniel Levy and you've got your Mike Ashley. It's all
I'm
going
to have to cut this interview short to go pick it outside Sports Direct in a minute.
Whoa. Well, Rory's here, and the good news is Rory actually doesn't give one iota about football in any way, shape, or form. He just doesn't care.
Well, he's probably a happier man for it.
Yes. Yeah.
Moaning Maureen sounded like the ghost from Harry Potter to me, and that's all I was thinking about.
Yeah, moaning
Not quite, but there we go.
You know, about 40 years ago, I was playing golf. Down Oldham near Manchester, And Malcolm McDonald made his home debut for Newcastle in 1971.
He used to play for Luton Town, of course, before
Newcastle. And anyway, he scored a hat-trick, and I was on the 18th tee when the news floated through to me, and I went running around like a silly man, chanting Indian sounds. And my friend who was with me, he was a cerebral sort of chap, he says, "How on earth could you be so involved in something over which you have no control?" I thought, he's dead right, you know. But
you say that, Ian,
as far as I've got,
but,
though.
But surely on one very spiritual level, as the Buddhists would say, we are all one with the reality, so we do actually have control simply by the power of our will, you know, the notion of believing. Look at what Klopp's doing with that.
All I can say, if that's the case, Alex, my will has not been strong enough.
Oh, well, it's harsh words, but at the same time, very true. So, Rory, I mean, we haven't even spoken about your do you have any sporting interest whatsoever? Is it okay? So, no, I prefer to do my creative writing.
Well, I think we're going to move on, Alex.
Absolutely nothing.
No. Couch potato. Very good.
No. Maybe tennis. That's about it, really.
Yeah. Can you name any major tennis players over the last few years?
Djokovic, Federer, Nadal.
That's okay.
Andy Murray.
Yeah, good. That's,
Tim Henman didn't count.
That's credible. Tim Henman was Tim Henman, no Andy Murray. You know, he paved the way.
I suppose.
He paved the way for the Scottish chap to actually do his business, which is an interesting line. Okay, Ian, would you like to hear Minnie Jones singing "Next Christmas"?
Okay, I'll give it a go.
Score. But hey,
won't say no to having more.
I don't know who's keeping score. Rory isn't keeping score. He's not into sport. Oh, well, what the heck? Fa-la-la, Minnie Jones, and number two in our top three list there, out of nine, which wasn't bad, actually. What did you make of Minnie Jones, Ian Lennox?
Well, I thought it jogged along quite nicely. Sort of things that if you have played at Christmas time, all the old grannies could do the hand jive to it.
Yeah.
And more important than that, it was long enough for me to eat my egg.
That's exactly the crucial thing that we've actually
That's
got.
That's how we measure all of our songs.
Put that on the album. On the album cover. Just
in
long
fact,
enough
well,
for it
Rory,
to eat
strange
my
enough,
egg.
2020, Ian Lennox presents 20 tunes you can eat your egg to. We'll actually take over. From now, that's what I call egg eating tunes, volume 1 to 104. You know, this is fantastic. With soldiers or without soldiers? Yeah, with soldiers or without soldiers, Ian?
Without. I had a little bit of toast as well, but yeah. Soldiers. I'm growing out of that, Alex. You're going to have to grow up, Alex. You can't go on like that, man.
But sure.
That wouldn't advise them. I'd advertise that on radio either.
Surely, you know, actually having little soldiers that you can dip into the egg is one of the critical sort of aspects of one's
soldiers.
Well,
you have a little
breakfast.
Tantrum, you don't get them, do you?
Strange enough. Where are they?
Oh, anyway, well. Yeah. It was quite a pleasant little jog along thing.
Which is.
And I don't.
There's nothing more you can say, really. Well done.
Not really, no.
Exactly. It's all right. She probably won't be listening. I don't know. Back in America now. So, Rory, any questions you want to put to Ian Lennox about his writing? We've taken a bit of a break from because how many words have you produced so far this year? I think about 100,000 or so?
Yes. It's about 110,000.
110,000 words. So,
oh, that's very good. So, Ian, do you tend to get more writing done over the Christmas period? Or
no.
Is it a sense of I'm going to take a break? I'm going to put this down and wait for the new year.
Yes.
Have some eggs.
When I'm writing, I make myself write at least 500 words a day, and I've gotten into it. I get in the state of mind. If I don't do it, I feel guilty. So I do it. But recently, I had a virus, and I got so tired, I had to stop. So I've stopped for about, been stopped for about 2 weeks. But I go back to and do 100 words, here and there.
Ian, do you know who's actually waving to us outside the studio now, like some sort of embarrassed
Santa Claus?
Kira Alsbrook. Maybe she's going to be elected. No, she's making signs now. She's making signs. I don't know. Rory, you better find out what she's doing. She's going upstairs, I think. She's ascending. She's ascending to another level. I must have seen Olivia as well.
Kira's a Facebook friend.
Emma, is there something happening for PR and communications that they haven't told you about? I'm just sort of raising this because obviously it might be worthwhile finding
out. I mean,
out.
The irony would be fantastic.
Can I get an authorised attendance for this?
Emma, if you've got to go for PR communications now, as Emma's tapping her, or rather Kira's tapping her phone, so I was saying, what about this then? I mean, I've already seen Olivia and she's looking very, very busy. Maybe you need to go.
No, I think they're having a meeting just for their group. There, she's giving me a thumbs up. I've guessed correctly.
Right. To which you're not invited, it must be sad.
I'm obviously not invited.
It must be very sad when that happens. Oh, well, never mind. Kira will obviously be seen, hopefully, at the wonderful winter show later on this evening, which is
thumbs up again to you.
Great.
There you go.
That's what we're actually here. I won't ask Kira to ask you those last two questions, Ian, because you couldn't hear them. You just use sign language to sort of express exactly what's happening. So, Emma, off you go.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning?
Yes, I have. Thank you very much.
And will you be joining us again next week?
I hope so. I'm now going off to vote.
Study. Oh, don't.
Yes, very important.
You can't say anything else at this particular stage. Step away from that. You know the rules of Ofcom. Whoa. let's move on, Ian, to the other little line, which is, of course, for Emma, who is going to be working for a major supermarket at 4 a.m. next Thursday morning. It's the last time you will speak to Emma until 2020. And likewise, Rory will be leaving Lincoln to go back to his wonderful land of Bedfordshire.
I shall.
So it's a very Merry Christmas from us in the studio.
Your last chance, Ian, to wish Emma and Rory, who, of course, have been through a lot with you, season's greetings.
Have a very nice Christmas and have a very, very good life ahead of you.
And you, Ian.
And you, thank you.
By good life, I mean, hopefully they'll be sort of obviously, you know, around for next year. We don't expect them to
see something like that. Pop
the
like
plants.
We should be back.
Yeah. Okay, then.
Yeah.
The mood is right, the spirit's up. We're here tonight, and that's enough. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. The party's on, the feeling's here. That only comes this time of year. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. The choir of children sing their song.
Almost think something was happening in 2 weeks from now. Happens every year as well, December 25th. It's coming around to 5 minutes to 9 o'clock here on Siren Radio, Lincoln's first community radio station. You're listening to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition in the studio, Emma Street and Rory McGowan. And we say get well soon, Emily Boston. I don't think she'd be listening. She sent me an email saying she's not 100%. So why would she be listening?
Well, still nice to send out those thoughts. And
I think so. That's very true. Yeah. And in the next hour, we will be having Richard Fitzwilliams, so we can go and have a nice full breakfast, I would have thought. Sorry, you're only kidding, Richard. it's wonderful. He'll be talking about two wonderful movies, The Two Popes and Atlantics, and of course The Two Popes, another one of those wonderful Netflix productions, which I know Richard loves so much because of the way you can actually watch Netflix on your mobile phone and so on. William Sitwell will be joining us, hopefully, and we'll be talking to Vet Blue Cross, or Blue Cross Vet, I should say, Roseanne Bulger, who'll be talking about how you can incorporate more pets into your Christmas time. Reminder, of course, we can think about Gary Whitgriff's line from yesterday, which is still worth considering, that we're all going in the same direction, but we're following a different path. Up next, the news from the Sky News Centre, after a little touch of Elbow and Sam Smith, and more good stuff than you could actually shake a festive stick at.
Hungry kisses, nobody knows me at home anymore. Build a rocket boat. Build a
this paradise so rare. Close your eyes, close your eyes, close your eyes, for we're almost there, almost there, almost there.
Almost there. We don't have to worry about Richard being almost there because he is here. He's arrived. He's sorted. We haven't revealed the reason why he was not around for his usual tempo state.
As well, I know. I knew you were going to make a meal of this. I mean, I knew you could.
After the meal we had at the In-N-Out Club on Friday, I would feel morally abhorrent if I even sort of mentioned the fact that it was you were suffering from flu and various other things, and that necessitated a kind of challenge with respect to.
And still, you're continuing talking about it. You see. This is valuable time that should be spent talking about the Golden Globes.
Golden Globes, two popes, Atlantics. Where, Emma, where would you like to point Richard to actually start off with on this whole thing?
I think Richard should choose.
You think Richard should? Rory, would you agree with that? Do you think Richard should?
Yeah, I think. I mean, he's the expert, isn't he?
Okay, then.
Well, I mean, I would simply say that with reference to the Golden Globes. What we've seen though is this absolutely extraordinary number of nominations for Netflix, and I'd just be interested to hear what the team thinks of the whole debate. I mean, for example, Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which I hope some of you have seen, and certainly one I would recommend. I mean, Tarantino regards with absolute horror the idea that, well, he accepts one day, no doubt, it will be streamed, of course. I mean, there's a certain number of weeks in Hollywood. France, it's 3 years. Here, it varies. But both Marriage Story and The Irishman, very famously, some 3 weeks after their release, are available for streaming. And what we've seen with the Globes, firstly, a large number of biopics. I mean, that I always welcome because I thoroughly enjoy them, and I think the Oscars generally do. Certainly, Renée Zellweger's performance in Judy does seem an absolute shoo-in. As for Best Actor, I mean, that, I'm amazed that Robert De Niro didn't make the cut, but I do have to say that it is so, so close. I mean, that really is going to be so difficult between Joaquin Phoenix, the Joker, Adam Driver for Marriage Story, maybe Antonio Banderas for the brilliant Pain and Glory. But this idea, Netflix, if it was only a few years ago, Beasts of No Nation, as you will recall, Idris Elba didn't get a nomination. This was the Oscar so white period, and also the fact that that was the very, very first nominated. Now, overall, including television, 34 nominations. It's absolutely extraordinary. And quite a few Brits, of course, too, which have been headlined in some of the papers. But I wondered what you all thought of the Some of us say a threat. I mean, I saw The Irishman and Marriage Story twice, actually, on the large screen. But how do you feel about only 3 weeks and then you can stream it?
Let's go straight to Rory. How do you feel about that? Only 3 weeks in terms of the window. It used to be 9 months. It used to be years, actually. And now it's just 3 weeks. Or is it a case of, as long as it comes on my mobile phone as soon as possible, I don't care? Rory.
Well, there is a traditional approach saying that, oh, the more, you know, time there is between it releasing on stuff like Netflix, you know, that encourages you to go out and see it elsewhere. But I think because Netflix has such a wide audience now, because streaming has such a wide audience, getting it into the eyeballs of more people sooner may just create a larger fan base for these movies and a greater appreciation for them as a result. So I think it is a good thing.
Get it into those eyeballs sooner, as they would have said on Anthony Burgess's Clockwork Orange. Make sure those eyeballs are pinned open from that point of view. Emma?
I had no idea about it, really. So.
Does it affect your enjoyment, the fact that this kind of window opportunity between movies being released theatrically and then available on video? Or on mobile phones? Or streamed?
I don't think it affects it, really. Mm.
Richard, they don't care.
Okay.
There is, of course, that line to be taken, but the Netflix, that was, I think, the main news from the Globes, which is actually setting up a collection of absolutely fascinating films. We haven't talked about 1917 yet, and we will be. The Two Popes, I see, has entered into the Best Film Drama category. I thought that it would be Ford versus Ferrari, or Le Mans 66, as it's known, but no, Popes has made it, so we'll be discussing that shortly. I have to say, I haven't seen Little Women yet. I'm seeing it tomorrow, but a very, very, very high standard, and my goodness me, that's something to celebrate. No doubt about it, and it'll be very interesting to see who wins. I mean, it hasn't, for rather obvious reasons, impeachment in the United States begun, the general election here. I mean, I don't think...
Richard, don't please. Remember, off-camera listening, we can't talk about that sort of thing. Other than... Precisely, yes. Let us progress then. Shall we consider Anthony Hopkins in such marvellous form, as indeed is Jonathan Pryce, where they kind of work together in the same way as you might well say Pope Benedict will connect with Pope Francis, Pope Francis with Pope Benedict, it'll be Cardinal Ratzinger with respect to the Argentinian. It'll be, who would have thought the fact you'd have, you know, such wonderful connections between Germany, between Argentina.
Exactly. Have you seen it?
No.
I wondered, you know, you went on so long about it. I'm getting my revenge for your earlier diatribe. You went on so long about it. You went on just too long about it, and I got suspicious.
Well, sometimes I can eulogise in such a way, much as I did about Frozen 2, of course, something else which neither of us has seen, but I'm sure we will in the fullest of time.
That's been nominated, you know, best animated movie.
No, it would be. I mean, there is no doubt at all that the fault is mine when it comes to the appreciation.
The fault, dear Richard, is not in ourselves, but in our stars, for goodness sakes.
And that we are underlings, Brutus and Caesar. Should be in that... Caesar, why should that name be sounded more than yours?
Friends, Romans and Lincolnshire people, lend me your Richard ears.
Yes, it's from Julius Caesar, and I remember winning a prize at school for reciting it all, which was one of the bits that I was reciting. Caesar is fascinating because it introduced me to Shakespeare. I was resistant, as so many are, when they hear it read round the class, and then I happened to have some ailment and turned on the radio and it came alive and I heard a dramatization. Memories. But when we kick off with Two Popes, directed by Fernando Morales, who did City of God, we have the ultra-conservative Pope Benedict and the liberal cardinal, who of course is to become Pope Francis. And they meet and they map out the future of the Catholic Church. Now, I do have to say that this is an extremely enjoyable film. But I also have to make a point that I do think that the very fact that it takes its subject, and the subject is slightly controversial. If you look at from Spotlight to a whole variety of films, Magdalene, women, I mean, for example, anything about the Catholic Church... these days will highlight the horrors of abuse and very, very possibly corruption. There is no question that this movie goes pretty easy on, shall we say, difficult or unusual topics. I mean, I'm not suggesting that it does what Wim Wenders, a noted film director, did in his documentary about Pope Francis, where he all but dared to mention anything that in any way would have been controversial. It quite literally was one of the most sycophantic loads of nonsense that I've ever seen. I was reviewing it for the Radio 4's Sunday program, the religious program called Sunday, and there was no one in the cinema, and no wonder. It was like a sermon, and it really was. It was extraordinarily boring. This movie is undoubtedly entertaining because Pope Benedict sends for this liberal cardinal who well, who he regards as a bit of a nuisance. I mean, he's Benedict is not progressive. He's also old, and he recognises it, and he has a dogmatic outlook. But the path he sees for the future of the Catholic Church, that's the... well, it's not really a surprise. We know what happened, but the way it's told and the way the story rattles along is pleasing enough, because we've got the spectacle, we've got the rather extraordinary beauty. I was at the Sistine Chapel quite recently, and the way they choose a cardinal, I mean, it is absolutely fascinating. And yes, Pope Francis does eschew some of the trappings of his office, but that is to come. The amusement of in this movie is the fact that as the two, as it were, the cardinal stays with the Pope Benedict, and they map out the future, broadly speaking, of how the Catholic Church ought to progress. And you've got two absolutely splendid performers. That's the attraction of this movie. It's not even so much the script. It's the fact that Jonathan Pryce is superb, and Anthony Hopkins is thoroughly enjoying himself, and also gives an extremely good performance. And it's interesting to see two individuals who had a totally different agenda, but nonetheless, it's a challenging role when you're Christ's representative on earth, and you go the direct line, or supposed to, from Peter, and the theological aspects of it, certainly they come up. But it's meant to be an entertaining film. Visually, it's impressive. Good heavens, you've got this, as I say, you've got really, 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 when you go around the Vatican, it is absolutely fantastic. My goodness me, it's the, talking about crowds, it is, and I'm putting it mildly, asphyxiating, but the Sistine is a thing of beauty. And so it's got that, and the clash of ideologies, the trappings of it that I mentioned, the fact also that the characters are examined, but we don't look at Benedict's past. After all, he's about to step down. What we do, and where the film does come alive, is look at the past of the future Pope Francis, where in Argentina he had a relationship which, no spoilers again, but it did involve a certain amount of cooperation with the military junta. And I think the flashback aspect of it was a very good way of telling the story, because it added a certain drama to it. Having said that, I cannot give spoilers, but I will say that the climax of this film does tend to indicate that when it comes to, I mean, just dealing with an institution like the Catholic Church, when you're not focusing on horrors, it does, there is just this feeling that there is a seductive quality about all the spectacle and all the history. And that comes across in a final scene that I found profoundly unsatisfactory. But having said that, I mean, yes, it's an enjoyable film.
Rory, will you be checking out the connection between Tomorrow Never Dies, wonderful villain Jonathan Pryce, and, of course, I love the joy of Chianti and liver and so on, Hannibal Lecter, of course, himself, Anthony Hopkins in The Two Popes?
Well, I don't know a lot about the Catholic Church.
That's shocking.
But the kind of transfer of power there could seem interesting.
First time in centuries, that's good. Because normally one pope dies, passes on, transcends, like David Bellamy. And not that David Bellamy was a pope, of course, but he could have been in some way, alternate reality.
David Bellamy, I don't quite...
You didn't see him as a pope? Surely, I mean,
I wouldn't have thought so.
Pope of the undergrowth, the back and so on.
I see you're creating popes of different...
Exactly. On this rock I will build my church, as the great man once said, indeed the great Lord himself. Will you be going to see The Two Popes, Rory? That's a question.
I think so.
Mm. Emma?
I'm similar to Rory, actually. It's not really the type of film I'd usually go for, but I don't know much, and I think it's quite fascinating.
Just have to wait until the 20th of December, and then you can watch it on Netflix or on a mobile phone.
Oh, okay, that's great.
So you don't have to worry about this, the cinematic trip, etc. I think watching the Sistine Chapel on a sort of four or five inch screen, it's what you need. Mm. It's what Michelangelo did it for.
I've seen it all in person, so I'm good now.
He told you that, did he?
I sensed the whole thing was there. When we were actually channeling earlier interviews, Sue Douthwaite and Andy Webb, to replace your good self, Richard, and we swapped the schedule around just to facilitate your awesomeness.
I'm glad that you've mentioned it yet again. You can't keep off it. I knew that this would be the case.
Let's move across the Atlantic coast and a soon-to-be-inaugurated futuristic tower looming over a suburb of Dakar. This, of course, launches into a whole new world of Atlantics.
It does indeed, because it won the Grand Prix at Cannes, and I mean, that is an amazing feat. And it's a very, very unusual film by Mati Diop, the first black woman to direct a feature film at Cannes, and so a great success for her. And it is set in a suburb, and indeed, this tower, the problem is that the tower is being built, but the workers, those who give their labour, haven't been paid for ages by Mr. Ndai, played by Diaku Sempene. As a result, they are desperate, and this leads to the lure of trying to escape. And it's partly a romance. Suleiman, the lover of played by Ibrahima Traore, the lover of Ada, played by Mama Sama, leaves by sea, and he's hoping for a brighter future in Europe. But Ada is betrothed to another, Omar, played by Babacar Sylla. And the drama of this, the unusual aspect of this, putting it mildly, this is a very, very strange film, because it involves supernatural forces, and it also involves some expertise when it comes to camera work and sound and so forth. Because when Ada wants to find out what's happened to her lover, what happens indeed when there's a disaster at sea, and, well, the men involved do come back, and they want to claim what is theirs. They weren't paid, and they are possessed by supernatural forces. This is, and it really is very, very unusual. It's groundbreaking, it's well-filmed, and it has a certain lyrical quality about it, but also it does grip you. It is very, very strange. It's rather taut. It's rather moving, and there's some very, very fine performances. So it's a compelling and provocative film, and certainly unlike one that I've ever seen.
Every love story is a ghost story.
Well, not every love story, but
it's just said it on Netflix. Richard, it's just said it on the Netflix trailer, so clearly it must be the case.
Oh, I see. As you know, iron trailers.
Exactly. The Telegraph also are regarded as pure cinematic genius.
No, well, it's poetic. The ocean is a threat, but the scenes we see of it...
Don't tell me you're possessed by a djinn. Sorry. Quoting from the film now.
I'm glad to hear it.
Rory, Atlantics.
Well, it does seem very, very interesting, I have to say that. And given that it is also coming to Netflix seemingly very soon, I have no excuse. Okay. I mean, I could watch both of them back to back if I so chose.
You've got your Google Plus, you've got your Apple Plus, you've got your Netflix, you've got your Disney Plus, you've got your Amazon Prime. You've got so many streaming services. Why would you ever want to go to the cinema again, really?
No. The cinema is so good, though.
That is blasphemy and heresy.
See,
and
why would you, Alex? Why would you?
He's deliberately so provocative.
He is.
Bestriding
he's doing
the
purpose.
Nano studio like a colossus when it comes to all this. You know, it's perfectly well that Netflix, yes, there is, of course, a great deal of good. Of course, eventually, movies should be streamed. But when and after how long and to what extent
as soon as you see it on the big screen
and
watch it again.
Prices going up and also the way moves cinemas are trying to appeal a great deal more to get especially young people to actually enjoy the big screen experience. And I mean, Netflix is therefore fascinating, and it has its points, of course, but it's also a threat as well, Alex knows.
Yeah, but where there's a threat, there's a weakness, there's an opportunity, and there's a strength as well, as SWOT analysis will tell you. Emma, will you be checking out Atlantics?
I wasn't expecting the twist of them being
possessed.
Possessed.
Oh, they come back. Yes, yes, they're possessed. In fact, it's rather strange who's possessed, but possessed they are, and they represent a decided threat to those who've treated them or mistreated them, with reference to the tower.
Mm, that's really intriguing. That I will be giving that a watch.
And Richard, you may be interested to know that although we hope to welcome you back next week to the normal time at 10 past 8, I won't talk about anything else on this particular stage because
you are cruel to him.
No.
It's not just cruelty. It's simply callousness.
It is.
We have
and enjoying it. The fact that he could set Guinness Book of Records for energy in one way or another, that's one thing. But the fact we can't all do it, and he knows
that's it. Quite all right, Richard. It's understandable. And as I said, just look at it as time.
No, I knew you'd bring it up yet again. Any excuse to talk about it. This is the thing. It's got to be talked down.
It will be the case.
Be. No. But if you look back at the Globes, now perhaps I should start. The way to talk it out is to review. I've got all the list of nominees.
I know that, Richard, but William Sitwell will be waiting, so we'll have to hold fire on that. And I was going to say that this is the last time this year that you'll probably be able to speak to Emma and Rory, because they'll be, in one instance, working for a well-known supermarket chain starting at 4 a.m. in the morning, and in the other case, going to Bedfordshire. So on that basis alone, do you have a Christmas message, Richard, you'd like to put to Emma and Rory before we hopefully resume contact between the three of you sometime in 2020?
Absolutely. I wish them a very, very happy festive season. And also, if I may add a second wish, and that is that they catch up with the very best, both in television and in film and in theatre, if they are so inclined, during that time.
Funny you should mention theatre, because actually one of them I did had an opportunity to attend a wonderful winter show this evening, and yet they've said no. So, it's a strange world, but never mind.
Who had an opportunity to?
Well, I mean, not that I want to actually point any fingers, but Rory, would you like to ask
Richard? He's winding me up now.
Those last two questions, please.
Well, it's a sort of taking on a festive license. Yeah. What we may have to do, you know,
I get so little pleasure in my life.
What we may have to do. I was doing a piece yesterday on the extremely disappointing, in a lot of cases, Christmas decorations in London. Next year, we may have to display Alex.
Oh. Wow. Yeah.
Well, happen.
That, depending on what happens with respect to results today and a certain sort of thing that's happening, could actually sort of do for England completely on that basis. Mm. But still. Don't say anything, Richard. Rory, last two questions for Richard, please.
Richard, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
As always, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
And will you be joining, perhaps not us, but Alex again next week?
Oh, yes, I certainly will be. We'll have more to discuss, and also we move nearer to the new year, which means it is nearer to the Film Awards, too.
Bavette steak was so good it made me want to nestle there with a decent bottle of red for the weekend. Not my words, the words of William Sitwell. Sitwell stirs it up, the column that he writes on a weekly basis for The Telegraph. We had hoped to be connecting with William Sitwell. We got his answer phone. Not quite the same, but we will not give up. We will try again, and maybe, just maybe, if we're pure of heart, if we actually think positively, then he may...
The Christmas spirit.
Exactly. He may be with us. Then again, he may not.
Hey, baby, I just got back from town. Yeah, the bribes are paid. Honey, they turned my offer down. Say the deal's already made. So now I gotta stand and watch while it all comes down. And the buzzards and the hawks and the judges and the mob circle round. Now if I were the queen, ropes that bind you and the role you play and the pride that hooks you while the big ones get away. Love junkies wanna change the world, quickly stays the same. Money junkies hire all the smart ones. Power junkies run the game, one step at a time. Polarity Hill. If the bad guys don't get you, babe, then the good guys will. Come hard. If I had a way to reach the sky, I'd grab that crescent moon, wield it like a knife, save you from the lies, from the ropes that bind you and the rope. Game that hooks you while the big ones get away.
But it seems as though he has got away. Buffy St. Marie and the big ones get away. William Sitwell, otherwise engaged today, never mind. We have got a superb programme to actually finish with because we'll be talking to Blue Cross vet Roseanne Bolger, who basically will be providing the top tips for a perfect Christmas. Yeah, perfect. With your pet. Emma, do you have a pet?
I don't know. My dog passed away a couple of years ago now, so...
And Rory?
I do not. My parents could never decide on one, so they decided on nothing.
Oh, that was so sad.
Well,
For those people who aren't actually able to make the wonderful Lincoln Performing Arts Centre with The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe this evening at 6 o'clock, I'm amazed that anybody will actually miss out on that. It starts at 7 o'clock. Obviously, you can book tickets for the rest of the season. It runs until Christmas Eve. Maybe you might like to avail yourself of What's on Siren at the same time, because at 7 o'clock it's Sound and Country Vision, the December edition with Tessa Snart, kind of precursor to what will be happening on the Midweek Drive, where we have not only Sound and Chloe's Vision with Chloe Rose, which is awesome. I know that because we recorded it a couple of weeks ago. And we've also got Sound and Country Vision with Tessa Snart and Chloe Rose, which we'll be recording in a few days' time, or especially about a week and a half's time. So that's just information which you might like to sort of put to one side. You can find out other details about programmes as far as Siren is concerned on sirenonline.co.uk. And meanwhile, in terms of Christmas song contests, etc., we didn't actually open the voting last night to non-humans, so other animal species weren't really invited to take part in the whole thing. They could have, but, you know, we never know. Apparently, in terms of top three songs for pets, this comes in at number three.
Outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Man, it doesn't show signs of stopping, and I brought me some corn for popping. The lights are turned way down low. Let it snow, let it snow. When we finally kiss goodnight, how I'll hate going out in the storm. But if you really hold me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. And the fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbying. But as long as you'd love me so, let it snow and snow. When we finally kiss goodnight, how I'll hate going out in the storm. But if you really grab me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. Oh, the fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbying. But as long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
So crazy and twitchy-pated when it actually comes to snow, of course. So is that deer. Yeah, I think it was Bambi. Then it was a frozen lake when he got twitchy-pated with Thumper. Or that was when he was in love. I don't know. Anyway, I don't think many people actually have deer for Christmas or venison, unless, of course, you fancy having some Rudolph. Don't eat him. He's got a red nose. In a matter of moments, as I say, pet owners. Were you surprised, Rory, by these findings in the East Midlands that 20% of pet owners and their pet listen to favourite Christmas songs together?
Well, I think it's really, really cute. I absolutely adore the fact that people just sit on the sofa, they cuddle in with their pets, and they're like, you know what, we're just going to listen to Christmas songs. Yeah, what I am surprised about, though, is I don't know how a study is able to find the pet's top three songs for Christmas. Mm. So I'll be looking forward to asking that question later on in the show.
Do you feel that might be a sort of woof survey that could be there? It could be
I mean, I don't know. That's why I want to ask. Yeah.
I bet it's a wagging tail.
Could be. 59% of pet owners also surveyed in this particular piece by Blue Cross will be settling down to a Christmas dinner with their pet. I wonder if they've got an axolotl. I mean, you know, obviously we're talking about cats or dogs here, but what about an axolotl? I mean, is there a place for an axolotl at Christmas?
I'm sorry, a what?
An axolotl. You know, I mean, paying attention to our pet Zoe Zoe Jameson when she's been sort of treating axolotl. A kind of lizard.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay.
Because let's face it, they might be cold-blooded, but at the same time, they probably still enjoy some festivities.
I'm sure they do.
So, given that another movie, which Richard astonishingly has not reviewed, was the Schmaltzfest Last Christmas...
Have you been to see it?
No.
Oh. Oh, I went to see it. I quite enjoyed it.
Yes, okay. The Songs of George Michael, of course. Yes. And it's not
it's Amelia Clark. It is Amelia Clark. The delight of Amelia Clark. Yeah, she's a wonderful actress.
Good. Good.
No, I thought it was a really lovely film.
Did she give people her heart and then the very next day it was given away?
Mm.
And what was about Emma Thompson and her wonderful Ukrainian
accent? Oh, you know what? Emma Thompson was great in it. Yeah, no, she was a delight.
Is it this year's Four Weddings and a Funeral or indeed Love Actually?
I hope so. I hope it'll still, you know, be a classic for some people. I cried a lot at the end of it. I thought it was... It's slightly different, I think, for a Christmas film to have a slightly sadder storyline to it.
But about the fantastic Jimmy Stewart and It's a Wonderful Life?
I haven't seen that one, so...
Well, then you should...
But I guess it's along those lines, then. It's got... it's still quite saddening, but it's a nice little... heartwarming bit at the end, really.
Very much so. In fact, yes, I'd make that mandatory viewing.
I will watch it, and you should watch Last Christmas.
Well,
you never know.
I will. I will certainly do that. So National Pet Charity Blue Cross will be providing tips on how to involve your pet in your family celebrations this Christmas. Question is, Rory, do you want Wham's Last Christmas or do you want Carly Rae Jepsen's Last Christmas?
Wham.
Oh, thank God. There's only one right answer to that question.
But sorry, Carly.
You can't beat the classics.
Carly would have done all the gestures and everything, the hand moves,
I didn't even know Carly Rae
Jepsen
had a cover.
I do like her. That's nothing against her.
Not doing Last Christmas.
But you can't beat George Michael and Wham.
Well, Andrew Ridgeley, of course, and Pepsi and Shirley. I mean, they're all part of the whole scenario. It's more than just George.
I know.
Yeah.
If nothing else, it'll keep the pets happy. Not only the joys of Let It Snow, but then Wham and Last Christmas as well. Although maybe pets might go for the Carly Rae Jepsen version. I don't know. Somebody who will actually know about that and will have heaps to share with us is that awesomely talented Blue Cross vet, the fantastically wonderful Roisin Bolger. How are you, Roisin?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Marvellous. Good to speak to you once again, Roisin. And here we are, tips for Christmas. I mean, both Emma and Rory, who are also in the studio with us, are very impressed with this whole side of things. In fact, Emma, did you have a question to start off with immediately with respect to how this survey was conducted?
I think it was Rory, really, that put the question forward.
Okay, Rory.
I have to know, Roisin, how do you tell the top three Christmas songs for pets?
Yeah.
How do you get the indication?
Yeah. Well, we have to take their owner's word for it. We surveyed a whole load of our pet owners that come to us, and we asked them what songs they feel their pets enjoy the most. And I suppose they know their animals well. They know when they're wagging their tail and looking happy and enjoying it. So their top three were Last Christmas, All I Want for Christmas Is You, and Rocking Around the Christmas Tree. So they seem to be the ones that the pets enjoy the most.
Yeah, I mean, I can go with that. I'm pleased to see that Fairy Tale of New York was actually eliminated, because I don't think that's really a suitable Christmas song, actually. So there we are. But still, never mind. Now, clearly, the run-up to the whole day of December 25th gets a little bit hectic and so on. It's one of those things where times are getting busy. Pets might well be taking advantage of themselves. And I think, as you said, Emma, they might fancy a trek down to the kitchen and say, I'll have some of that.
Yeah,
I'll have some of that.
So.
And then there'll be poorly pets, and you'll have to treat them, Roisin. So on a very serious note, 57% eat not drunk something they shouldn't have over Christmas. This is a, I mean, we kind of hopefully know you don't give your dog chocolate. Please don't. But, you know, there are lots of other things that could sort of work in terms of that side of things, couldn't there?
Yeah, that's right. There are lots of treats and things that we eat commonly over Christmas, which we should be keeping away from our pets. Chocolate definitely is a big one. You know, it's really, really quite toxic to them. So not just in the kitchen, you need to be careful with those gifts that are wrapped up under the tree too. Our pets can be very crafty and can get into through layers and layers of wrapping paper. So, you know, make sure that all the chocolate is kept well away. Another common one we often have around the house at Christmas is mince pies, Christmas pudding, Christmas cake, anything with dried fruit. So currants, sultanas, raisins, and even grapes themselves are very, very toxic to dogs and cats. They can cause serious kidney problems. So again, even the tiniest amount of those can be dangerous. So keep them well away from the pets, locked in the cupboards where they can't get their paws on them.
We have a regular weekly stop with a student vet from the Royal Veterinary College, Zoe James, of course, and she was recently treating an axolotl. She's mostly specialised in horses, but obviously if you're going between horses and axolotls, it's a way forward. These primarily, Roisin, look very much towards, I suppose, the traditional cats and dogs, etc. What about the hamsters, the guinea pigs, the axolotls, etc.? Is it the same sort of thing, or is it a case of the thing about cats and dogs is they tend to actually be more inquisitive?
Well, that's it. Cats and dogs are very inquisitive and can be a lot more crafty. Generally, our little small pets are usually caged away, so they can't have so much access. But you do have to be careful with things like wires. You know, we have a lot of Christmas lights, a lot of wires to the tree around the house, and those little animals can be very fond of chewing, you know. So we'd always say make sure the wires are either wrapped up or up at a height where they can't get to them, because obviously you could end up in a very serious situation if they manage to chew through any of those wires.
Well, likewise, if you've got a rabbit and wires, deadly,
yes.
Deadly combination.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, it goes beyond the actual sort of inconvenience of actually having the electricity go off, but you'll have an electrocuted rabbit as well. It's not good in a number of sort of ways. Rory, any other questions you want to put to Roisin?
So, Roisin, in terms of incorporating your pets into Christmas, we have seen that you've got 59% of pet owners surveyed will be settling down to a Christmas dinner with their pets. Mm-hmm. Christmas dinner for pets, what does that look like? I'm not a pet owner myself.
Well, a lot of people will actually, in that same survey, we saw that 21% of people actually cook a special dinner for their dog or their cat on the day. So, you know, they're having a dinner probably pretty similar to us. We're very happy for them to have things like turkey meat, mashed potato, Brussels sprouts if they want them, peas, carrots, all those sort of things are absolutely fine. But you just need to avoid some problematic foods. So, the bones, we need to keep them well away from the bones on the turkey. The meat strings, people forget about those. They can taste delicious to animals, but they can cause a lot of problems if they eat a meat string and it gets stuck inside. And of course, you know, onions and garlic, any of those types of plant are very, very dangerous to animals. So being careful with the gravies and the sauces and things that you're giving them, we would say to avoid those completely. Just a simple meal of turkey and potato or something is fine. We've lots of information on our Blue Cross website, www.bluecross.org.uk, and we've got the 12 perfect Christmas dinner ingredients that you can choose from. So people have lots of options to give their pets things that won't make them unwell.
I was intrigued there, Roisin, you mentioned sprouts. Now, to me, sprouts, obviously, they can create, in humans at least, great opportunities for flatulence. is it something which, in terms of the dietary mechanisms of cat, well, dogs in particular, that actually sort of, if you don't want to have a farty Fido, then maybe you need to avoid the sprouts, or is it just an irrelevancy?
I think it's the same as people. It probably varies from pet to pet. Some can be a little bit more stinky than others. So,
well, exactly.
I would always say trial things in small quantities first. Make sure your animal can handle them. And if it is becoming a little bit
toxic,
then maybe try something else. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can't even line that. You use the line, you know, they who smelt it dealt it. So that would be, you know, inappropriate in every sense of the word. Emma, any thoughts for yourself?
I was just thinking about how worrying it is, really, about the fact that, you know, dogs or cats can go about eating chocolate or alcohol, apparently, as well, having a bit of alcohol. But,
let's hope they don't go for a tipple.
when my dog was around for Christmas, you know, we did our best to make sure that, you know, we kept him involved. But it's not just so that you spend Christmas with your pet, but it's also you keep an eye on them, because Christmas is such a busy time that, you know, you don't know what they'll find lying about on the floor or any of that kind of thing. But you must have loads of pets that you need to treat around Christmas time.
Roisin, is it a case of, with respect to Blue Cross, that you're kind of on call, like the emergency services, saying, oh my goodness, what's happening here?
Yeah, we do get a lot of calls over Christmas, and we are there, you know, 365 days a year in our hospitals. We have staff working all over Christmas. And we do get calls, unfortunately, with people panicking that their animals have eaten something they shouldn't. You know, I think it's all about being sensible and trying to prevent these things from happening, because it is a stressful time if they do. We have had animals come in to us that have eaten lots of Christmas cake, or that we had a dog recently that ate the whole advent calendar of chocolate.
Wow.
In about five seconds flat. Yeah. So, you know,
Did they actually open the calendar at the doors as well?
They got all the wrappers off. I think it all went down in one. But yeah. Certainly, you know, that little doggy wasn't feeling too well for the couple of days afterwards. So really just, you know, have a look around the house, you know, make sure that everything is out of their reach, and just be sensible of what you're giving them as treats, you know.
Well, that makes perfect sense. Roisin, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with yourself. A reminder of the best website to go to for Blue Cross, it is?
It is www.bluecross.org.uk. And we're also running an appeal at the moment. If people would like to donate to give our animals in the rehoming centres a nice Christmas dinner, they can go to www.bluecross.org.uk/dinners.
Fantastic. Roisin Bulger, Blue Cross vet extraordinaire. Many thanks. Season's greetings, and I'm sure we'll speak in 2020.
Bye-bye. Happy Christmas.
And meanwhile, for pets everywhere...
I'm not afraid to die.
And we thank Gabriella Peralta, we thank Richard Fitzwilliams, Rob Skinner, Ian Lennox, Sue Douthwaite, Andy Webb. All sorts of wonderful things there. There's a little bonus interview coming up actually at the end of the programme, which is only available for podcast listeners, that we'll talk about, thanks to Roisin Bulger as well. And in the studio, of course, thanks to Rory McGowan and Emma Street. And thank you, dear listener, for however long you've actually been with us, podcast or otherwise. Siren Radio, as I say, continues ever onwards. The news will be coming up in a matter of, well, actually just over 90 seconds from now, so it's frighteningly close to the news. So what shall we actually say?
Well, it's a Merry Christmas for me and Rory.
And not happy election
day. Or voting,
day.
I suppose.
Happy voting day.
Merry voting.
Merry voting.
Go out and vote.
Oh, that's a bit more aggressive.
A bit harsh, isn't it? Yeah, exactly.
An aggressive tactic. Oh, yeah.
Exactly. It's there.
Do
it's
it.
An opportunity to exercise your franchise. Take it in any way, shape or form you actually wish to do. Anyway, Dua Lipa is coming up. So, Merry Christmas. We'll stick with that.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, we'll
two,
stay with that.
Three.
Merry Christmas.
The time is approaching where clearly the decision will be made, and what happens, who knows. But it seems that if you're looking at finding the first constituency to declare a result, considering the time the first constituency declares a result, or even want to know whether John Bercow's tie will be a signal colour, there are a number of wagers that can actually be made ahead of the grand general election. And who better at such a time than to actually bring on board the head of political betting at Paddy Power, the awesome Joe Lee. How are you, Joe?
Good morning. Very well, thank you.
Excellent. So, I mean, we were used to, obviously, the first constituency to declare a result. I know there's a big race for that. Sunderland usually up there from that point of view, and a whole set of other factors within that. But it does seem as though we've got a whole range of things here, including, of course, a number of Lord Buckethead specials that you're offering at Paddy Power.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously somebody who's trying to steal the thunder of Boris Johnson, the PM, and he's done so in the past as well. Mm-hmm. So it adds a little bit of colour. And what more do we want in a general election at Paddy Power than a little bit of colour? So he's 2-1 to get more than 250 votes.
Yeah, and 33-1 to actually have a picture of himself and Boris Johnson to be tweeted from the @Conservatives account, which I thought makes interesting value from that point of view.
I can't imagine they'd be tweeting that picture with a Get Brexit Done tagline.
Or if they do, maybe Boris Johnson will take away the mobile phone. Let's not go there. It's a different line entirely. Weather. Now, that's an interesting one. I think you're on fairly safe ground that snow will not be recorded in London on polling day. That's 5-1, really, from that point of view.
Yeah, I think that one's been drifting out since. So
nice one, Joe, drifting out.
There
snow.
We go.
Classic.
There we go. It is 33-1 that a polling station will be closed due to flooding, which, given the weather around London last night, isn't a extreme outsider at all.
Yeah, and is that just London polling stations, though?
Concentrating on kind of the London area, yes.
And what about this John Bercow thing? Will he use the term order, order during the election night broadcast? Will he realise he's on Sky, he's no longer in the Houses of Westminster?
Yeah, see, only a 16-1 shot. I'm surprised that's as short as it is. But given he's been yelling order, order to a rather disrupted parliament for the last number of years, who knows, he might forget himself. He's 8-1 not to wear a tie as well. So I don't see any value in that, because if you do look at him making any public appearances at all, he generally wears a tie. And it's 5-1 that it's a single plain colour as well. He's generally a colourful character.
I mean, it's not as though we're kind of heading into the ties of Jon Snow, the Channel 4 news anchor person, because, I mean, clearly, you know, that basis, it would never be the same colour, really, all over the place in terms of ties for that gentleman. But what the hey.
Indeed.
I mean, any that particularly appeal to your good self? I mean, I see that the best supported constituency or consistency candidate in the last week was Monica Harding in Esher and Walton. So, I mean, are we looking at, in terms of, you know, some more serious sort of moments here? And, of course, you've also started offering the avoidance of a Portillo movement for Dominic Raab.
Yeah. So look, somebody who's been under a lot of pressure in recent times, and there's been a lot of posting on social media of the hustings there, and the Lib Dem candidate Harding does appear to be putting Raab under a lot of pressure. So 60% of the bets placed in that constituency in the last kind of week to 10 days have been on the Lib Dems. So very much shortening up from 7-2 into 6-4. So definitely a potential Portillo moment there. Somebody who could be under a lot of pressure, relatively high profile.
Now, over the years, as we've spoken, Joe, I mean, clearly we've talked about the craziness of the political situation, and clearly United States politics kind of used to lead the way. Do you think in Britain we're out weirding the US in terms of some of our characters that are actually up there? Because, you know, over the last few weeks, I've tended to think, yeah, maybe we are actually sort of even more stranger than what's happening in the States.
So you're going to make the claim that we're weirding out Donald Trump and Twitter. Mm. That'd be a bit extreme, I'd say. We're not getting to that juncture just yet. And look, there's a US presidential election next year and potentially an impeachment before that. So I don't think we can get any weirder than that.
Mm. And I suppose any odds in terms of they would swap roles and basically Boris would become president of the United States and we take Donald Trump? Would that be an option? Yeah. Is that way out there?
I'd say it'd be a pretty big price. Yeah. And I think from a regulation standpoint, it's probably not permitted.
Yeah, it's just that we have Leicester City win the premiership. Who knows?
There you go. Yeah.
Wide and wacky routine. Joe, it's been awesome sharing some thoughts with you yourself today. Any sort of advice from your own point of view, or would you say just you know, maybe go for the safe ones, or if people do fancy a flutter? I mean, the 33-1 shot, as I say, for me seems to be sort of the likely one about, but where would you suggest?
I guess looking at some of the more serious markets, the overall majority has been the market we've seen a lot of volatility in, and a big poll last night suggesting that the blue conservative wave may be receding a little bit. So a hung parliament into 9-4 this morning on Paddy Power, and unfortunately it does look like it could be trending that way. So we might have to get Bercow back into the Houses of Parliament and get a bit of order going again.
There's a whole new world we could actually go for. I mean, maybe you can consider it yourself, Joe. I mean, I'm sure you could actually do a decent job.
I'd potentially give it a crack, yeah. Sure.
There you go. And Paddy Power, presumably the place to go to online if you're looking to actually sort of engage in any of this particular material.
Yeah, there should be signposts all over paddypower.com for the political betting over the next couple of days.
Brilliant. Joe Lee, Head of Political Betting at Paddy Power. I wish you a happy election and all the very best for the forthcoming season. Take care now.
That's great. Thank you. You too.